I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Joel Kahn, is a clinical professor of medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine and director of Cardiac Wellness, Michigan Healthcare Professionals. He is a graduate summa cum laude of the University of Michigan School of Medicine. He lectures widely on the cardiac benefits of vegan nutrition and mind-body practices. Dr. Kahn also writes for Reader's Digest magazine as the Holistic Health Doc, and his first book, The Holistic Heart Book, is available for sale now at www.holisticheart.com. He can also be found at www.drjoelkahn.com and on Twitter at Dr. Kahn. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Kahn, and I look forward to hearing about a healthy heart. Now, first, what is the most important step you can take to have healthy arteries for life?
Well, thank you for inviting me, and what an important question. But, you know, the list isn't just one item, but the most important item is fully understanding the power of your fork. Understanding that food isn't just calories, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, but food is information that goes directly to your genes. And we know this really well now, that you may have a family history of heart disease or be concerned about a brother that had a bypass or a sister that had a stent. But if you understand the way food works, and there's a huge difference between processed food and fast food and what's kind of happened to the American diet in the last 60 years, and kind of farmer's market and farm-to-table and really the rainbow-colored vegetable diets that man ate for a long time before the golden arches popped up, there's a huge difference in how our genes respond and because of that, how our arteries respond. So adopting healthy eating practices is number one on the list. Now, there are other things, but if we ate different in this country, 60 to 80% of the diseases affecting adults, including heart disease, would disappear. Mm-hmm. We just don't want to do it, or we don't know about it, or we just like the taste of bacon too much, I think.
I think that it's sort of hard to follow some of the diets, though, that I have looked at recently. I was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation in December, and I've only had maybe three or four episodes, and I've gotten off the meds, and I'm treating it more naturally. And I'm one of the protocols I'm using is Dr. Sinatra's protocol, and it seems to be working great. But I did read another physician's protocol, and he said, let's see, fruit and vegetables, no oils, no avocados, no apples. I can't remember. It just went on and on and on. And I have a naturopathic physician friend. I said, how could anyone follow that diet? And he said, well, he said, you have to modify it. So, because I think I've always had a pretty good diet.
I'll tell you a little side story, because, you know, the evidence that supports what you just said is the work of a Dr. Dean Ornish, cardiologist in California, who started doing research in the mid-1980s, almost 30 years ago, and a Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn.
That's who it was.
Surgeon,
right.
A surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic, not a cardiologist. Both of them have published, and it's accepted in medicine, results that say, if you have heart blockage and you'll eat, it's basically no added oil, vegan diet, you can reverse heart blockage. No other diet in the world has ever been shown to do this. And it's a question, is that hard, or is a bypass hard, or is a heart attack hard, or is taking 12 drugs hard? So the story I wanted to tell you, I actually strongly believe in their research, and I let all my patients know about it, and most don't follow it. They think it's hard. So about 4 months ago, a gentleman in the Detroit community approached me and said, he wasn't even my patient, because I have heart disease, I followed the diet of Dr. Esselstyn, some people call it the Essie diet, and he told me, it's lonely, it's hard to go to a restaurant, at Christmas time it's hard to be with family, can we develop a support group like they have in Cleveland, like they have in California with Dr. Ornish? And I said, sure, ran a little tiny thing in a local newspaper about it. First meeting, we had 130 people. We thought we'd have 13. Second meeting, had 100. Third meeting, we had 100. we've developed this group here that's maybe the biggest in the country right now. And what's really fun is we're going to restaurants and saying, we can bring 100 people on a Tuesday night to eat. Can you cook no added oil vegetarian meals? And we're making life a lot easier around Detroit with a social support group and a whole lot of new friends and all the rest. So, you know, with that kind of momentum, it's not as hard. I eat entirely plant-based, but I don't eliminate all oils. I'm very fortunate in my mid-50s to have no heart disease. If I had blockage, I would eliminate oils in a heartbeat, but I'm very careful about how much oil is in my diet. But you're right, we're not going to get 100% of America to swear off processed meats, bacon, sausage, pepperoni, even though the data about eating them regularly is rather scary. Nobody wants to hear it. The strategy is, if you're ever going to eat, this is Dr. Kahn's strategy, you're going to eat bacon and pepperoni, have a big green salad, have a big slice of tomato. You have to balance it with very antioxidant, vitamin-rich foods, which are always fruits and vegetables.
See, I had thought that the plant-based oils were okay.
If you shift diet from animal-based fats to plant-based fats, you've done a lot for your health. For example, because I've always got a story. For example, the country of Finland, after World War II, went from poverty to some decent economy. People started eating like they were the kings of Riley. Butter consumption went up. Whole milk consumption went up. Animal food consumption went up. They then got the award for the highest heart attack rate in the world in about 1970. Men in their 40s and 50s were dying of heart attacks in Finland faster than any other country in the entire world. The country got together and said, this has to stop. We're a small country. We can't afford to lose these 45-year-olds. And these were thin men working in the fields as farmers. There was no obesity problem in Finland. They got together and they said, we're going to shift as a country. We're going to teach in the schools and the clinics and the hospitals. They shifted butter to plant-based oils. They shifted milk to 1% or even they suggested some of the non-oils. They emphasized quitting smoking. Heart attack rates fell 85% in the first 10 years.
Oh, really?
So you're absolutely right. You are better off. As much as margarine has been maligned and as much as people will sometimes say butter is a health food, it's poppycock. Plant-based oils are better. Olive oil is better than butter, but you still want to watch the volume and the amount, and it isn't a health food. Olive oil is not a health food. Olive oil is a better substitute than butter, and it's best to keep it down.
Great. Good, because I do use olive oil, but then also someone had told me that sesame oil was very good if you had atrial fibrillation, so I use
That's interesting.
Sesame.
Sesame seeds, I always like the whole, I like olives more than olive oil, and I like sesame seeds more than sesame oil, but it doesn't always do it when you're trying to cook. I like vegetable broth when you cook, but sesame seeds are packed with antioxidants and vitamins, and they actually lower your blood pressure. There actually are vitamins that put ground sesame in for that reason, and and a chemical called sesamin, and they may have some impact on atrial fibrillation.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. What would be, then, the easiest step that people could start with right now?
Yeah, so good question and simple question, and I've got two answers. Is simple step A, simple step B. Simple step A is learning about spices and starting to use spices. Crazy answer. You always want to increase the amounts of fruits and vegetables in your diet as much as you possibly can, even if it seems ridiculous. Spices are all plant-based, whether it's cinnamon, nutmeg, clove, allspice, oregano, basil, thyme, ginger. They're all plants. They're even though they're dried, or unless you pluck them out of your garden and they're really fresh, they still contain far more vitamins and antioxidant power than almost anything else in our diet. You're going to have a bowl of oatmeal, throw some cinnamon, nutmeg, allspice, clove on top of it. You're going to have some a pizza, which I'd suggest you ask for maybe cheese-free or light cheese so you just don't get all the saturated fat. Throw as much oregano or basil on top of that pizza as you can from a spice bottle, or even the spicy red pepper flakes, which actually are very good for your arteries. Get spices in your life. And, you know, in a day, you can increase the quality of your food content, the antioxidant quality, just by having spice bottles around all the time. The second one, simple steps. And I stole this from a wonderful author and nutritionist named Kathy Freston. When I see my patients and I kind of say, there is this vegetarian thing you might want to learn about, they get all buggy-eyed, it's way too much. I said, do three things. Start eating an organic apple a day, mm-hmm. unbelievable source of vitamins and fiber. Try non-cow milk. There's 16 different kinds on the market now, soy milk, almond milk, coconut milk, hemp milk, oat milk, mm-hmm. and some of the others now that are out there. You know, even the local grocery stores have a wide variety, and you'll find one that works for you. And some people, all of a sudden, their stomach upset, their migraines, some of their bloating goes away because they were exhibiting lactose mm-hmm. milk protein problems and sugar problems. And some people just, you know, see a benefit in lower cholesterol and blood pressure. So that's number two. And number three is just try a hamburger that isn't a hamburger one day. Try a bean burger. Try a garden burger. Try one of these substitutes. That's the three steps. Apple, milk, and a burger. Some of the kind of get a good snack habit out of going to apples and grapes and such. And mm-hmm. just three steps. They come back a month later and say, I did those three and that wasn't too much. And what's the next three? And, you know, we kind of build on that.
Mm-hmm. So you don't advocate even the fat-free milk?
I mean, if you're in my world, if you're hanging on to dairy, mm-hmm. you're better off reducing the amount of animal saturated fat. So skim milk is going to beat out whole milk by mm-hmm. a lot. And, mm-hmm. of course, even though it's only 4% fat, if you look at since milk is mainly water, mm-hmm. almost all the calories in whole milk is fat calories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it does not have the health benefit that the whole mustache milk ad suggested. It's all been mm-hmm. big dairy, very powerful lobby group, not telling us the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell people, if you like milk so much, and I don't want to offend anybody,
mm-hmm.
cut out the middleman at the store, just find a cow, sit down under it, and go right for the udder if you're so crazy about it. I don't mean to offend anybody. I am a little cuckoo. But, yeah, skim milk, better. That was kind of the Finland story. Switch from whole milk to skim milk while they switch from butter to plant-based
mm-hmm.
oil.
Mm-hmm.
Saw an 85% drop in heart attack rate before there were fancy cholesterol medicines or anything else.
Mm-hmm. As a child, we had the next best thing to having a cow, and that was having a farm within walking distance. So we would take, at that time, it was an aluminum pail, which you wouldn't use today, but we'd take our little aluminum pail and we'd get fresh milk that was unpasteurized, unhomogenized, etc., and we're living well.
You go to jail for that now. You know, raw milk, there are proponents of raw milk, but in California, the government busts people that sell raw milk, viewing it as a health risk, so I don't even want to go there. I'd rather you just get some almond milk and coconut milk and be in better shape. But it's crazy how what you did as a kid would now be viewed in some settings, at least if you sold it, as inappropriate, but that's all
right.
Another story.
Well, the other story is that we grew our own fruit and vegetables, which were not genetically modified, did not have growth hormones, etc., in all that we ate. And so I think that we lived
yep.
better back then.
Not everything was easier. We didn't have our iPhones and Androids. We couldn't order a pizza by a click on our phone, but we didn't have 80,000 chemicals floating around our environment that are taking a toll on us, which is why purchasing organic food products and even organic
mm-hmm.
cosmetics.
Right.
There is a whole growing multi-billion-dollar field now of cosmetics that you could literally eat because
mm-hmm.
they're entirely plant-based. And when you look at what we were putting on our skin and hair and sunscreens, it just wasn't fair with the, or maybe the industry didn't know, but there are very good substitutes now that are,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they say don't put it on your skin if you wouldn't eat it. And there actually are companies now making products so good you can take your toothpaste
mm-hmm.
and eat it. And I've seen people demo that. I haven't done it myself yet.
Right. Now then, how much exercise do you advocate for people as a preventive or if they have heart problems?
Well, that's really an exciting topic right now, including even this week's new data, because, you know, there's kind of two philosophies, the statement moderation in everything, and then there's the statement, you know, if a little bit's good, more must be better for you. And exercise kind of usually falls in the second one. Well, you know, I got to get that hour in every day, or if an hour is good for me, I'm going to go to the gym 2 hours a day, or
mm-hmm.
if I ran 3 miles, maybe I should train for the marathon this year. And, you know, the number of people participating in marathons around America and the world have just exploded. You know, I don't do that. But anyways, the data's come out in the last 5-10 years that there's kind of a sweet spot of how much time you might want to spend exercising in a week for optimal health and optimal heart disease prevention or treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not 2 hours. Good news. It's not 2 hours a day. It's not 3 hours a day. It is not the marathon running. Studies from this country, studies from Denmark show that 2.5 hours a week are kind of like the perfect range, moderate to high intensity. That's half an hour, 40 minutes a day, 4 or 5 days a week. And specifically, repeated performance in marathons, repeated involvement in triathlon events of great duration, something you're having to do for, 4 hours, mm-hmm. 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours, and all the training may actually harm the heart. I'm not making this stuff up. It's in all kinds of published data in the scientific literature.
Yeah.
Just this week, there were two new articles out from Europe, again showing if you had to pick, if you love to run, go run all day long if it's what's making you happy. But if you're exercising as a way to optimize your health, you don't need to do much more than 30 to 45 minutes. You want to get that heart rate up now and then, but, a moderate level. Even something like Tai Chi. Tai Chi, an oriental, slow-moving, graceful action that even the elderly can do without any problem, has been shown lately to have tremendous cardiovascular benefit. So it isn't the strongest necessarily wins at the end.
What are the strangest ways to avoid heart disease?
Well, when I teach my patients and they always put their eyebrows up, I teach them about sauna. There's new things out there that I didn't learn in medical school. I went to some really fine places and study with some good people. So if we were treating heart patients in Japan and I had patients with congestive heart failure or I had patients with arterial disease, I'd be writing a prescription that patient get in a sauna at a high temperature for 15 minutes, just 15, and let them cool down for half an hour, maybe every day, maybe 2-3 times a week. In Japan, it's called Waon therapy, soothing warmth therapy. And the interesting thing is cardiologists and scientists in Japan have been studying that for 20 years. It actually helps your arteries heal up. It actually lowers your blood pressure and improves your ability to get around in congestive heart failure. And at least one piece of science out of Japan says you may actually live longer if you're a heart patient who gets sauna therapy. And, every sauna in the country has a sign warning if you're a heart patient. And you should check with your doctor before necessarily jumping in a sauna. And again, it's not 2 hours. In Japan, it's 15 minutes of a sauna, about 140 degrees. They use a specific kind of sauna called infrared, and those are available for purchase. They're a little different than the standard health club sauna. And then I think the second one, and I'm going out on a limb here because there's a little less science for this, but there is some interesting data that walking, that we are no longer connected to the earth. We wear rubber shoes. We wear rubber gym shoes. We live in homes that are insulated. And then we've lost some health benefits from the old days when we either wore leather shoes, leather bottom shoes, and walked barefoot more. And there is some data that walking barefoot in the grass, walking barefoot by a lake, by a body of water, can have anti-inflammatory effects, limit inflammation, arthritis, can actually make your blood thin a little bit, and that for a heart patient, that can be quite good. So I tell my patients it's called earthing or grounding. It's not going to cost you a dollar to take your shoes off once in a while and walk in your front yard when the weather's good. Give it a try and soak it up. It always feels good, but there is actually a shred of science behind it all.
We'll probably have to go back and start taking kerosene on a sugar cube every year. As a child, that's what my mother gave us every year when we went barefooted because of worms.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that?
Yeah. there are so much to be learned from some of these old habits. Now, I don't think we're going to go to leeches and cupping anytime too soon. But there are some old habits, and when we go and study them, the Indian culture uses a lot of a spice called turmeric. It cooks with black pepper and turmeric. Now we know that turmeric is an extremely powerful anti-inflammatory spice, and when you cook with black pepper and turmeric, you absorb the turmeric better. So they've been doing it for hundreds to thousands of years, and now science has shown there was some reason along the way somebody started to do that, and they felt better doing it, and they kept on doing it. So I love when you kind of can actually find some credibility to some of these wise tales.
Right.
A mustard plaster,
Oh,
mustard plaster is mustard. Mustard's rich in turmeric. Mm-hmm. You sit there with a mustard plaster, you'd be getting a anti-inflammatory spice through your skin. Little credibility to it nowadays. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Well, you know, when I was in nursing school in the early 50s, we did mustard plaster. We did flaxseed poultices. We did a lot of those things that you never hear of anymore. But
right.
That was part of patient care back in the 50s. So,
there's still are a couple of places. There's a healing institute in West Palm Beach called Hippocrates Health Institute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have a strong experience with wheatgrass as a very rich source of vitamins and antioxidants. And they will treat a wound with a poultice that's soaked in wheatgrass. And they claim they see some very rapid healing.
You mentioned medical school. I'm wondering where you learned about nutrition and exercise and all these holistic approaches to wellness and cancer care. Was that in medical school?
You don't learn in medical school. I became an avid reader, reading Dr. Ornish, reading Dr. Esselstyn, reading Dr. Gabe Merkin, mm-hmm, reading mm-hmm. Dr. John McDougall, websites and books along the way. And then I actually decided about 3 to 4 years ago to get more formal training. And there are societies. There's a society called A4M. There's a society called Institute for Functional Medicine. There's an American Board of Holistic Medicine. And a doctor out of training can go back now and do postgraduate work at courses online. You can get a certification, you can get an actual master's and even beyond if you really are serious about it. So I've done all of that, a lot of reading, a lot of lecture attending, and I've actually completed a holistic cardiology certification training through a medical school, through a university. So very credible. I can't lecture there unless it's everything's grounded in medical science.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. I think that some of the physicians have, you know, really come a long, long way in becoming more holistic in their approach, and I'm just so delighted to hear that. The last thing that I wanted to ask you about, and that is supplements. A lot of people take supplements. What are your views on that?
Yeah, very hot controversy. I would say most doctors would answer worthless, expensive urine, and there's two reasons to answer that, I think. We do not get any formal training in medical school, and you'll never attend a lecture at a hospital or a dinner program at a restaurant talking about the value of vitamins, because vitamin companies don't sponsor those kind of talks. Pharmaceutical companies do. So we don't get the training, and there have been some articles that have made it, you know, medical experiments that have made it to the press, the headlines, that have really kind of been twisted to make it sound like there's never a role for vitamins. I had formal training for a year in a university to increase my knowledge, and I've done a lot of additional reading. I like targeted vitamins. I think that, you just mentioned atrial fibrillation, congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. One of the supplements, coenzyme Q10. Mm-hmm. You go back, you study biochemistry, you study how we generate energy in the heart. The failing heart, the congested heart, needs help, and I put patients on a program, Dr. Sinatra's program for congestive heart failure, and I add a few little twists to it. There's a new Chinese herb. It's not new. It's new to me, called berberine, that you add it to Dr. Sinatra's supplements, and you just see some remarkable improvements in people. And people have skipped beats. People have palpitations. All you got to do is start adding some magnesium in their diet and supplements. Wonderful things. And so, again, it goes back to what we said, and you were talking about growing up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Our nutritional value of the food we're eating, even food that looks good, like brightly colored vegetables and fruits, is less rich in minerals than it used to be. And therefore, taking daily magnesium, taking coenzyme Q10, taking a probiotic that sort of balances some of the insults on our GI tract, I think aren't really optional anymore. I have a basic kind of foundation of vitamins I like my patients to take. I don't sell it to them. I wish I did, because they have to go find them on their own. But they come back, and the response you see is really very gratifying.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then, Dr. Khan, can you tell us about your books and services and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah, I have a website that's up to date and can be emailed and such, and that's Dr. Joel Kahn, but it's Dr. for Dr. JoelKahn.com. And I welcome you to go there. There's a newsletter that's free you can sign up for, and a lot of stuff I've written over the years that's in there. And then I have a book out, the Holistic Heart Book. Very grateful that Reader's Digest invited me to write a column for their magazine every month or two and publish my book. And there's a Reader's Digest site. You can see it on my website, or holisticheart.com is where the book is available. And then in September, it'll be available on Amazon. But I put together, just got published a few months ago. It's a little over 300 pages. There are a lot of really good books out there describing different diets. So I talked about nutrition, but I went to exercise, went to supplements, went to sauna, went to meditation, yoga, stress management, and really a very broad approach for the heart patient to learn more about.
Mm-hmm. This is wonderful. And I wish that we had someone like you or Dr. Take that I mentioned that I'd interviewed earlier in our area. But I think that we have just the very traditional, focused on just the heart, the traditional approach. So I wish there were more.
I think you need to buy that doctor a copy of my book as a present and tell them they need to read it.
Good. I'll do that. Good. Right. Great. Well, then I appreciate this very much, and I hope that I will be able to talk with you again at some point.
Well, thank you. It was a real honor to speak to you today, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Kahn.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. We now have the completion of the interview from last time for my second guest, Dr. Albert Mensa, who is an internationally recognized physician specializing in metabolic treatment approaches for patients with developmental, learning, behavioral, and mental health disorders. Dr. Mensa is the president and co-founder of Mensa Medical, the largest biomedical practice specializing in biomedical individuality and imbalances. Mensa Medical's non-drug nutrient approach is targeted to correct biochemical imbalances associated with autism, anxiety, depression including postpartum, behavioral and learning disorders, OCD, eating disorders, bipolar disorders, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease. Dr. Mensa regularly consults with physicians, psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and other healthcare professionals, and leads annual physical training with William J. Walsh, Ph.D., of the Walsh Research Institute in Orthomolecular Medicine in the United States, Austria, and Ireland. Mensa Medical's main clinic is located in Chicago, and patients can be seen at their U.S. outreach clinics located in Scottsdale, Arizona, Annapolis, Maryland, and near San Francisco and Los Angeles, California. More information is available at www.mensamedical.com. How successful are your interventions then?
Across the board, in general, we have about an 85% success rate.
Wow.
Absolutely. And like I said, Carl, at the beginning, this is why I'm still here. Because if someone had told me this when I was, you know, I'm a family practice doctor by tradition, treating psychiatric disorders is one of the things that I did. If someone had told me they had that kind of success rate, I would have said, sure, okay, whatever, buddy. I'll believe it when I see it. And yet, day in and day out, this is what we see. Our reason for having a 15% failure rate is first and foremost non-compliance. For some reason, when patients don't comply, or and I'll be quite honest, quite a few mothers or fathers out there like to dabble and try to fix their kids themselves, and they interfere with the protocols that we've developed. That's the biggest reason for system failure in what it is we do. Now, 5 to 10%, actually it's more about 7%, of our patients, for some reason, are just recalcitrant to nutrient therapy. There's another factor that we haven't yet identified. And those individuals simply don't do well. They don't do worse cognitively.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, physically, they do tremendously better because what we do, you know, the body and the brain multitask using the same elements to live and thrive.
Mm-hmm.
In our nutrient programs, while we're targeting the brain, the body is using the same nutrients and getting everything it needs. Because, Carl, we know in America these days, our diet is really not a very good one in general.
No.
But so we tend to be more nutrient deficient than not. But our nutrient therapies provide tremendous benefit for the bodies as well as the brain.
Mm-hmm. Great. Very interesting, because so different from when I went to school and I was in mental health from 65 to 69. And, you know, I don't think genetics was even mentioned. And epigenetics hadn't come along yet. So I don't think any of this was mentioned in the program that I went through with Hopkins.
Carl, I'll tell you, it wasn't mentioned in my medical school either. And we did not know about epigenetics, certainly. That's one of the new phenomenons in the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were going to school, we didn't even know. You know, we were one of the first medical schools to actually have a nutrition class.
Certainly
that became a quarter of our biochemistry class.
Mm, good.
And so we typically, of course, dealt very strongly in biochemistry, but no one told us, because no one knew, that the biochemical applications that would arise later on had their roots in our basic biochemistry class. We had no idea. So in this field, we've basically gone through a whole nother residency and subspecialty program in order to do what it is that we do, because this is not taught in medical schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to change that.
Good.
But, you know, right now it's a process because most doctors have no idea because that's not how we were trained.
Mm-hmm. Good. Then, Dr. Mensah, would you tell us about any books, services, or products you have and how the listeners could reach you?
Oh, yes, sir. Out there, whoever's listening, you need to get a copy of Dr. William Walsh's book called Nutrient Power. Nutrient Power is a wonderful book elucidating some of the genetic mechanisms or epigenetic mechanisms, how nutrient imbalances can be related to a lot of cognitive disorders, disorders that are very common, things like anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. In some cases, how food and dietary imbalances can also produce a very small percentage of them. For example, people who have a gluten intolerance, it may represent 5% of schizophrenia at diagnosis. And once the dietary component is corrected, these individuals tend to lose that diagnosis. Now, that's just an example, but and it's only 5%, but that explains the 5% who don't get better on medication. It's because the food is a problem. So Dr. Walsh's book talks about things like that. At our clinic, certainly our website at www.mensahmedical.com, that's M-E-N-S-A-H, medical.com, has quite a bit of information about biochemical imbalances. So does the Walsh Research Institute. That would be www.walshresearchinstitute.org. And, you know, sites along those lines are probably the best bet to at least start the journey and try to figure out or learn more about biochemistry and biochemical imbalances. We also do consultant work through direct healthcare access to labs. There, it's fairly limited, but we can actually test individuals and their chemistry and give some very basic assessments and basic help in order to get people moving in the right direction, you know, especially if they're in remote regions or, you know, they can't quite afford being a patient and things like that. But they can get the testing done, initiated by telephone, and then they can have consultations done. And then they can order products from anywhere they want to. We carry a limited line of products, Carl, only because for many of the people that we've done consultations for, they couldn't find this stuff anywhere in the amounts or concentrations that we were telling them to, or in the form. For example, when we recommend zinc picolinate, I myself remember looking around several department stores, several grocery stores, trying to find that particular form of zinc, and I couldn't do it. So a lot of people came up to us and said, listen, we can't find this stuff. And we said, okay, So we did some research and investigating, and we found some very, very excellent laboratories that were willing to work with us, and they're actually producing the product that we designed for, you know, that we request in terms of design, and we carry those brands and those particular elements, you know, there on our website. So if people go on the website, they can actually see what we have available, not only in terms of information, but in terms of products as well. And ours is limited, Carl. We're not a pharmacy.
Right.
We're not trying to sell products here. We're trying to help people.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. Mensa, and I appreciate your coming on the show and sharing this great information.
Carl, thank you very much for having us, and hopefully this will help your audience. And if anyone has any questions, you know, they can actually call us at telephone number 630-256-8308. And those kind of conversations are absolutely free. There's no charge for them. You know, information does not cost you anything.
Great.
Okay?
Great. William Kollenge, Ph.D. M.P.H., licensed social worker. My third guest is consultant, author, speaker, and researcher in the field of integrative health care. He conducts a private practice of health-related psychotherapy and mind-body medicine in Eugene, Oregon, for individuals, couples, and families facing challenges to health and well-being. He has extensive experience supporting people with cancer, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, HIV/AIDS, and other conditions, as well as veterans and their loved ones. He has led workshops and retreats across North America, in Hawaii, New Zealand, and the UK, and is an affiliate faculty member of the Oregon Health and Science University. In addition, he directs research projects sponsored by the National Institute of Health through Kollenge and Associates. His latest book is Partners in Healing, Simple Ways to Offer Support, Comfort, and Care to a Loved One Facing Illness. More information on his multiple grants, books and book chapters, articles, consulting, and other activities can be found at www.kollenge.org. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Kollenge, and I look forward to hearing about touch, caring, and cancer. And I believe this is such an important topic and an important part of holistic care for cancer patients. So I am very happy that I have this opportunity to interview you. Now first, how did you become interested in exploring touch as a form of caregiving in cancer?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because it's something that I think is really important, as you said. And I came into this work, I'm a clinical social worker by background, and was working in a cancer support program in the San Francisco Bay Area called the Cancer Support and Education Center. And what we did, and this was back in the 80s and 90s, what we did there was we had a what today would be called an integrative therapies program, back then was called complementary therapies, with a lot of group therapy, supportive group therapy, as well as massage therapy staff was there. And we had nutritional consultation, and we had dance therapy, movement therapy, guided imagery, you know, all the things that are fairly common today in the cancer support world. But one of the things that was unique about that program was that we required that each patient be accompanied by a family member or significant other or other care partner of their choosing, because we felt it was that important that people have a supportive relationship in their life, but also because we realized that cancer affects not just the patient, but the loved ones around them. And especially in cases where the person is in a marriage or has a life partner, that the partner is often even more in distress with the loved one's cancer than the patient themselves. There have been actually studies on this indicating that if you're a patient with cancer, at least there are concrete steps you can take, you know, actions you can take in the way of treatment. But if you're a loved one, you may actually suffer more because you're in a position of being a witness or a passive observer in a way. And often there's a feeling of helplessness. So the care partners, caregivers often are underappreciated and under-supported in terms of their own needs. And so they, in that program, they were full equal participants in all the activities that we're doing, including massage. They would receive massages, and the patients would receive massages, and everyone found the massages to be really, you know, beneficial for dealing with the stress of cancer. But one of the scenes that that occurred that is burned into my memory was an exchange in one of the groups with the husband of a young woman with breast cancer who had actually just had a double mastectomy, and she had young children. And I remember her husband saying, "I just wish there was something I could do. I wish I could reach into her body and pull the cancer out. I just feel so helpless." And that really impressed upon me the need that care partners have to be able to do something helpful, to do something to make an impact on their loved one's suffering. And so I began to investigate touch as a possible way that care partners could be taught some simple things that could make a difference. And I had colleagues and friends who were, you know, doing massage with cancer patients, and I just thought, gosh, you know, what they're doing is so simple. In a way, all we're really interested in is relaxation and the supportive use of touch. So it's not rocket science to be able to, you know, come up with some ways that they could use touch in a caregiving relationship. And the other thing that I observed was that at a time when patients could benefit the most from touch, they were actually receiving it less, or maybe even not at all, because those around them were afraid to touch them, didn't know how to touch them. They thought, what if I cause harm or complication or pain? So those around them who were in a position to be supportive were reluctant and inhibited about providing touch. And, of course, even the patients themselves maybe were confused about, is it safe for me to be touched? And then even in some cultures, there's also a myth or a belief that cancer could even be contagious. Some people may have that as a subconscious fear. So there are all these reasons why touch is a wonderful potential resource and yet neglected or underused for people with cancer. So that's what went into my initial interest. And then I developed a plan with a couple of massage therapy researchers to actually create a caregiver education program called the Touch Caring and Cancer Program to teach care partners simple things they can do.
And what is in that program?
So, well, the Touch Caring and Cancer Program is actually a multimedia package. It was originally produced as a DVD, about an hour and 20 minutes long, that was filmed at a series of workshops with couples with cancer, and we conducted these workshops in order to obtain the instructional video footage to teach all the techniques that that are taught in the program. So it teaches about basic guidelines for safety, you know, how to avoid areas of lymphedema, how to, you know, what are the safety precautions that would apply for cancer patients, depending on whether they've had lymph nodes removed or if they've had chemotherapy that might lead to very frail skin, could be easily injured, or how to avoid areas of radiation or surgery. So there are several significant safety precautions that apply to cancer patients in the use of touch and massage. But these are things that are all easily taught. And so there's a section on that in the instruction, and then the rest of the video is about how to use home furniture, common home furniture such as a kitchen table, for seated chair massage with someone leaning over the table on cushions, how to access their back, neck, and shoulders and provide very comforting massage.
Mm-hmm.
Teaches techniques for head, neck, shoulders, back, feet, and hands,
mm-hmm.
and face and ears. But the focus is all on simply providing relaxation and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need to do anything complicated or risky or dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the benefits of relaxation. And of course, in doing that, the couple's relationship is enhanced because touch is a form of communication. And of course, the caregiver feels like they're doing something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, they are doing something. You know, so they feel better about being in a caregiving role. They feel there's something concrete they can do, and so everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. And so, was there some research carried out on this?
Yeah, this whole program was developed under a research grant from the National Cancer Institute, and we conducted a randomized controlled trial with 97 mm-hmm. patients and their caregivers,
mm-hmm.
and we followed them for a number of weeks and months. Got very good data about the impact of these massages that the care partners were giving. We actually, over the course of the study, there were almost 6,000 massages that took place with the participants in the study at home, and they averaged around between 3 and 4 massages a week,
mm-hmm.
and around 17 minutes per massage. And the data indicated that the effect for the patients were actually comparable to those effects that have been found using professional oncology massage therapists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a study at Memorial Sloan Kettering a few years ago on the effects of massage in cancer, and they found that for many symptoms, one single massage session could reduce symptoms by 40% to 50%.
Mm.
And that actually is roughly the magnitude of impact that mm-hmm. we got in our study, just with family caregivers providing the massage sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really exciting to see how much impact that lay people can have, and particularly family members,
mm-hmm.
on their loved ones with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that of course, was using the video, the DVD, at home without any professional supervision or guidance,
mm-hmm.
just using the DVD by itself. And since that time, we have made the video instruction available on the website as a streaming video, so people don't even need
mm-hmm.
the hard copy. They can just stream it directly mm-hmm. online.
Mm-hmm. And where is this used now?
Well, it's used in many cancer centers, hospice programs, palliative care centers in the U.S. and Canada, and also in the U.K., Australia, and several other countries. In
mm-hmm.
Vietnam, we had one of our colleagues actually working at the National Cancer Hospital in Hanoi, Vietnam, and she conducted a series of workshops there using the Touch Caring and Cancer program. And
mm-hmm.
they actually produced a Vietnamese language version of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's being used in Vietnam. We also have the program in Chinese language, Spanish language, and the Japanese version is in the works right now with a publishing company in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely something that crosses cultures in terms of the need of loved ones to have something they can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Then how can people gain access to your program?
They can go to the website, which is partnersinhealing.net. And they can read all about the program there. Also, there are video excerpts in mm-hmm. English, Spanish, Mandarin, and Cantonese languages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the DVD is there, available if people want to order it from Amazon. Or they can watch the streaming online version
mm-hmm.
right there on the website at partnersinhealing.net.
Mm-hmm.
And the streaming online versions are available in all the available languages, including Vietnamese, as well as Mandarin, Cantonese, Spanish, and, of course, English. And then there's a print manual that accompanies this, and that's downloadable as an e-book on the website in those languages.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. I appreciate this very much, and it's been interesting, and I know it will be helpful to those that are caring for their loved ones that have cancer. So I thank you very much for joining me.
Great. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Uh-huh. Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my two websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the previous shows for the last 5.5 years archived under the blog. Using the search engine, you can find specific people or you can find specific topics of interest to you. You can also find my book, Healthy Holistic Aging, and also my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, for sale. You can sign up for my free monthly newsletter, and you can also sign up to have the shows mailed to you. I invite you to my second website, www.beatlungcancer.net, where you will find my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, which discusses my experience with lung cancer 39 years ago when I was given 6 months to live by traditional medicine and decided to use all natural interventions using a holistic approach. This approach was successful and I had no recurrence. Additional chapters in the book by Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. James Forsyth, Dr. Francisco Contreras, Dr. Kim Dossel, and Tanya Harder Pierce give additional ways to treat lung cancer using alternative, non-invasive, non-toxic interventions. You will also find the endorsements for the book and other information about it. And under the blog, you will find many of the radio and television shows that I have been interviewed on over the last year about this book. I also invite you to like my pages on Facebook. I have a page under Carl Helvey. I have a page under Holistic Health Show and a page under Beat Lung Cancer. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to seeing you next time. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great day.